Good morning. I want to call the Senate Health and Human Services Committee to order for Tuesday, March 27th. We have four bills we wanted to talk about this morning. Senator Wolf is the first one on the list, but she's not here yet, and Senator Brown has said that he would be willing to jump the queue a little bit. So, Senator Brown, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before us today, I have Senate File 2372, and Mr. Chair, I do have the A2 amendment to get this bill in order.
Okay. Let's see if we've got that here. Getting the A2 amendment distributed now.
Is the fiscal note drafted to the A2 amendment or to the bill? I haven't seen A2 yet, but do you know that, Senator Brown?
I just spoke with Dennis, and it is for the A2 amendment.
Okay. Yes, okay. I believe it's to the amendment. It's not to the amendment?
The fiscal note is not, no.
This isn't.
It doesn't show the shift.
That, okay. Well, we don't have the fiscal note either.
It's coming.
I don't have it in my packet. I was looking at.
Apparently, the fiscal note is not drafted to the amendment, but Dennis will, Mr. Albrecht will explain what is going on here. And why don't we go ahead and, Senator Brown, take your A2 amendment. Senator Benson moves the A2 amendment to Senate File 2372 as an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? I guess we don't really technically have a quorum, so we need one more person. So we'll have to re-vote on that once we get a quorum. But we'll assume that we have it in front of us. And
okay.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment offers a couple things. First, on line 1.5, where it's implement nursing home level of care criteria. And this will add a few words on 1.8. On or after July 1st, 2012, will be for adults and children. And then also, continuing care provider fiscal year 2013 payment delay. The Commissioner of Human Services shall delay the payment or payments in fiscal year 2013 by up to $22,854,000 to the service providers listed. And then the Commissioner on line 2.11, the Commissioner shall make the delayed payments in July of 2013. That is the essence of the bill. And at some point, I do have a couple testifiers to talk about this, Mr. Chair, when you're ready for them.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and get your testimony, and then hopefully we'll have a quorum. Welcome to the committee, and give us your name for the record.
My name is Rodney Peltoma. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you about this issue. My name is Rod Peltoma, and I am the director of the Mille Lacs County Area DAC. I have worked in the field of disabilities for over 30 years in both residential and day programming. The Mille Lacs County Area DAC has two sites, one in Malacca and one in Princeton, Minnesota. Our program is a day training and habilitation program which serves consumers who are developmentally disabled and mentally ill.
Could I just interrupt you for 1 second? We do have a quorum, and I would like to take the action on the adoption of the amendment. So again, Senator Benson moves the A2 amendment to Senate File 2372 as an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Sorry. Please continue.
As I mentioned, our program is a day program and habilitation program which serves consumers who are developmentally disabled and mentally ill. We employ 55 staff between the locations, and have many of our staff have worked for our agency for over 15 years. The organization has been around for roughly 37 years, providing day treatment and habilitation. Currently, we have about 115 consumers that we're serving. We serve individuals from Mille Lacs, Benton, Sherbourne, Nabec, Ashanti, and Stearns counties. All of our consumers are involved in vocational training or work and have opportunities to work on community skills as well as life skills. All of our consumers earn a paycheck and use that money in the community for living expenses and entertainment. DT&Hs, or Day Training and Rehabilitation Programs, have not received any type of funding increase since 2008. In fact, we have received program reductions of funding in 2009 and most recently in 2011. The 1.67% reduction proposed to go into effect on July 1st came as a total surprise in the special session agreement last year. And that goes on top of the 1% reduction that we already received last year. In addition, the 1.67% would cost our agency alone $30,000. It may not seem like a lot of dollars, but for us, that has a very significant impact. It's very difficult for our program to absorb that cut. This would mean a loss of potentially a staff position, and it would very adversely affect the consumers that we work with. Continued reductions affects our ability to find employment opportunities, and it greatly affects our ability to continue quality programming. And I guess my question is, what would we do if DT&H programs were not available? Where would those consumers go? I really don't believe the intention was to cut disability rates so deeply and hurt most of our most vulnerable people. I know that DHS submitted a federal waiver to remove this cut. However, it was sent in so late that it's highly unlikely there will be any response from the federal government by the end of this session. I ask you to consider supporting Senate File 2372 or any other plan that removes this reduction. We need to consider the impact we are having on our disabled and vulnerable Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the witness? And Senator Brown, we have another person on the list.
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. I believe Mr. Bruce Nelson is here.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Senator Brown, for bringing this issue before us. Before I get into my very brief testimony, I thought it would be a good idea to create a little context of why this is coming forward. During the special session, there were three items affecting people with disabilities beyond the regular rate cut that either were surprises or I think with input from other folks would have been done differently. One was the delicensing of beds, certification of beds, and we've talked about that issue with you before and hope that tomorrow night that can be addressed. The 10% low need cut that was done without full knowledge of the assessment process that we don't have in Minnesota, so many high need people were hit. And then the 1.67% contingent care cut. And where this came from was that back in 2009, the legislature passed a new set of standards, nursing home level of care standards, and booked considerable savings around that would change the eligibility for people in nursing homes, and then therefore in some of the like CADI program and TBI. When the Affordable Care Act was passed, there were maintenance of effort requirements built into that act that basically said we cannot change those standards. We have to maintain what we're doing. So last in special session, the legislature, in the agreement with the governor, decided to cover the amount of savings that would accrue to the nursing home level care standards had they been able to proceed with them, and to the tune of about $28 million in creating a contingent cut. And as the previous testifier said, that if we don't get a waiver from the federal government, this cut would go in effect July 1st. In my mind, I'm not a gambling person. I don't like gambling, but you know, the metaphor or analogy comes to mind of Peter and Paul, Paul made a bet that we'd get this thing through the federal government, and went and asked Peter to cover it. And we're Peter, and we're really not directly part of the wager that we're making, if you will, and feel that I don't like the word fairness necessarily, but it was inappropriate to place the marker or whatever you call it in gambling on folks with disabilities and providers and day services and the various waivers. So we're asking Peter to pay for Paul, and I think that's inappropriate, and I know it's a lot of money, and so I am very pleased that we found a way to, at least in the short term, to figure this out. And should the federal government not grant the waiver or delay in it, I do look forward to next year working with you to cover how the shift in payments that's in the bill.
Okay, thank you. I would like to, Senator Lurie.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And then I guess I'm just reading the fiscal note. So the fiscal note is drafted to the bill, not the amendment. And kind of the intent with the amendment, the way I read it, is to postpone this payment delay. And I'm wondering if a fiscal note were drafted to the amendment, is there an assumption that the feds would approve this waiver? Or what would happen? You know, I mean, if we delay this, and I'm in favor of the A2 amendment, I plan to vote in favor, but I'm just trying to figure out what the fiscal note would be as drafted to the A2. I don't know the current status of the waiver. I know that we've been pushing for it. I've called out to D.C. and encouraged our federal colleagues to view this waiver favorably and avoid this whole issue. And I know that the executive branch, the governor and DHS and everybody has been pushing as well. But I don't know the likelihood at this point.
I want to ask Mr. Albrecht to comment a little bit on the fiscal note and then the effect of the amendment. So perhaps you can answer that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lurie, and members, my understanding in my discussions with staff at the Department of Human Services is that there would not be an assumption that the waiver would be approved if the fiscal note were drafted to the amendment. And then the fiscal note would show a reduction in fiscal year 2013 of $22,854 and should just move that cost into 2014.
And so are you?
That's what it is then. And
okay.
So I guess your intention is probably delay this over for possible inclusion.
Right. The House has been working on this issue as well. They have taken a slightly different approach to doing this, and so
I got some messages this morning that said that the House had done something by turning this 1.6 cut into a delay also. I assumed this was similar to this approach. How does the House's approach differ?
Well, I'm going to ask Mr. Albrecht to explain do you know what the House has done exactly? Or
Mr. Chair, I believe the House just delays the cut until 2013. This actually repeals the cut.
Well, not under the A2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lurie, under my amendment, this does repeal it in 2013. I haven't discussed it with the House, but I was told theirs just delays it.
Mr. Chair, I mean, when I read the A2, it says the Commissioner of Human Services shall delay the last payment.
Senator Lurie, that's the payment, not the cut. The House delays the cut.
Okay.
Mr. LaBaker, did you want to comment on your...
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lurie, and members, the amendment is essentially the same as the House. However, okay. Since we repeal the contingency rate cut, whereas they just also delay that cut by a year,
okay,
that is essentially the difference.
So I get it. This is not a delete everything. This is in addition to the repealer, and the House's delay is in place of the repealer.
Right.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Now now I'm tracking.
I think we're all trying to get to the same place, just
right,
trying
right.
to get to it in two different ways. So, Senator Brown, did you have other comments you wish to make?
I do have one more testifier if you want to
all right.
take more testimony, Mr. Chair.
No. May I?
Please.
Oh, thank you. Chairman Hand, thank you. Esteemed members, thank you. It's good to be back again. I'm going to be short and sweet because the last two testifiers did a good job, and Senator Lurie's clarification was correct and necessary. I'm Norm Monk. I'm from the Minnesota Habilitation Coalition. I'm the president-elect. I also am honored to run a program for individuals with developmental disabilities. The bottom line is we're looking to repeal the cut for all the reasons that Bruce said. I don't have a clever metaphor. I am a gambling man, but not with our clients, that's for sure. And we appreciate your support through the years in a huge way. The only thing I would do is make it more personal. I run a program that supports, 300 individuals. You know what we do. We find jobs and we support individuals in so many other rich ways that you've helped us with through the years. But the bottom line is on my $5 million budget as a small businessman or person, it would amount to a $40,000 cut this year and an $80,000 cut next year, which is $120,000, which equivalent of three positions or four positions. You get it. It would be devastating on top of what we've already succumbed to over the years. So I really thank you for your listening and for your support on this, and I really hope that you will buy back this cut. Thank you very, very much.
Right. Thank you. Any other questions? Members, what we're going to do is, with the permission of the author, lay this bill over for inclusion, possible inclusion in a finance bill that we are going to, I hope, vote out of committee tomorrow. And so we'd like to lay this over for inclusion, if that's permissible.
It is, Mr. Chair.
And hopefully we can figure out how to take care of some of these problems in that bill and move along. So I appreciate you bringing the bill.
Yes.
We will lay this lay Senate File 2372 on the table for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
I did see Senator Wolf apologize for not being clear on when we were starting. I guess that's our fault. So, Senator Wolf, do you want to take up your bill? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I came straight here, so I didn't even stop in my office and grab the bill yet. So I'm trying to look for it. Nor did I grab my glasses. Mr. Chair, would you like me to start with the amendment or introduce the bill first?
I assume you want to add this as an author's amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'd ask Senator Hoffman to move the A2 amendment as an author's amendment to Senate File 2496. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Bill's amended. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look on page 3 of the bill, what this bill does is add kidney dialysis as one of the emergency services. And what the amendment does is makes that a sunsets it to end at the end of the biennium. What this is an attempt to fix a problem that emerged, and it's not intended to be a long-term solution, but something that will address a situation that is happening. Under the belief that if we continue to offer them dialysis, it'll prevent emergency situations in the hospital, which would be much more costly.
Were there any people here to testify, or?
Sir, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Krinke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. As you all can probably imagine, the Hospital Association is supportive of Governor Dayton's approach, which is full restoration of both services for dialysis as well as the cancer treatment under the Emergency Medical Services Program. But we are not opposed to Senator Wolf's approach, which is a one-time fix with the sunset language in there. We obviously believe that a fuller discussion on what to do with emergency medical assistance in the next biennium is a better approach in 2013. But with this amendment added, we are not opposed to Senator Wolf's bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Wolf or Ms. Krinke, I'm looking at the fiscal note, and it does, you know, have a pretty significant fiscal impact. Could you tell, do you have figures on what the impact would be if we don't do this? You know, knowing that if you're dialyzing somebody, it's much cheaper than having them in an ICU.
Ms. Krinke.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hoffman, obviously the costs of ongoing care for someone who needs dialysis, if they don't get their dialysis, it often leads to amputations. It often leads to inpatient hospital stays. Every patient is different, so it's really hard for me to say what the cost of one dialysis treatment would be if it is skipped and what their long-term costs are. As a nurse, I'm sure you know these costs, and it's going to vary by patient and how many dialysis treatments a patient would miss. I know that's not the specific answer you're looking for, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Krinke. I think the point I was trying to get at, even though there's a fiscal note here that's showing costs, I think that intellectually we can all agree that this would be the cheaper method than putting somebody in an intensive care or having to go to emergency surgery or whatever else comes from not having dialysis. I think that was the point I was trying to get at.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, we would agree with that assessment. Thank you.
Other questions? And again, Senator Wolf, our intent would be to lay this over for potential inclusion in a larger bill, and I hope that's agreeable to you.
That would be fine, Mr. Chair.
And so if there's no further questions, then we're going to lay Senate File 2496 over for inclusion in a finance bill. Thank you for being here this morning, and thank you for your testimony and your work on the bill.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay. Yes. We do have two more bills. One is Senator Rosen. I know she is in the Finance Committee. She's got several bills over there. The last bill on the list is Senate File 2102, and I am going to present that.
Oh, there you go.
Get a page. We've got some handouts to.
Center hand, we have Senate File 2102 whenever you're ready.
Madam Chair, the first thing I'd like to do is make a small technical amendment, and I'm going to ask Mr. Lobaco. Trying to read, I think it's on line 1.9 of this bill, which is just an appropriation, but it refers to Chapter 689, and Mr. Lobaco perhaps can give us the additional detail.
Mr. Lobaco.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, on line 1.9, Chapter 689 is quite long, so if we, after the 689, insert comma, Article 2, comma, Section 251.
And Senator Hand, is this the first time this is heard?
Yes.
So that could be added as an author's amendment?
Yes,
then.
Please. So I would move the oral amendment as an author's amendment to Senate File 2102.
All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Hand?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have Dr. Tim Burkett from People Incorporated who's here, and I'd like to ask him to talk a little bit about the bill.
Doctor, welcome to the committee. Just to, if you could introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Senator Fischbach and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Tim Burkett. I'm CEO of People Incorporated. People Incorporated is a provider of services to people with mental illness. We're the largest provider in the state. We serve about 6,000 people throughout the Twin Cities and in outlying areas. Today, I'm here to talk to you about a specific request, and that's for the only program in the state for people with serious and intractable epilepsy who have mental illness. That's an independent living skills program that has been funded by the state for more than 20 years. We serve approximately 75 people a year who have need to work on getting their seizures under control, adults, and also struggling with mental health problems. And we move our primary group on toward to independence with from 1 to 3 years. We have a secondary group that we're just trying to keep out of nursing homes. And we do this at scattered sites in the community. We serve people from the four corners of the state. And we've been very, very successful in placing people vocationally and keeping people out of the hospital, you name it. And I have been before you before other years. This year I'm before you because we need a $65,000 appropriation to keep the program going. As most of you know, due to cutbacks in the waiver to people who were considered low need last summer, many people who didn't really have no low needs got that 10% cut, and it just so happened that people with epilepsy and mental illness were really significantly cut because, and this has been talked about in front of your committee before, that the assessment tool that was used didn't assess the specific needs of people with mental illness. It was based on a different population. So it ended up articulating a large group of people as being low needs who weren't. So as a result, we had significant cutbacks, and this merely compensates for those cutbacks so that we'll be made whole and continue our more than 20 years of serving people with epilepsy who come from the whole state to work on their independent living skills.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, I again would like to have this bill be laid over for consideration in the larger bill that we'll be working on tomorrow.
Senate File 2102, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
The last bill we have is Senator Rosen's 2157. I believe she is still in finance. So, pardon me? I think she may be on her way. So why don't we just recess for 5 minutes until Senator Rosen gets her.
Oh, 2 minutes.
One minute. We'll give her a moment to gather herself. We will call the committee back to order, and Senator Rosen. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a couple bills down in finance. So, Mr. Chair, we have Senate File 2157, which is the Child Care Assistance Program Absence Day Limits Exceptions for Certain Children. So basically, this bill is going to modify the absent day statute for families receiving child care assistance. Currently, under the child care assistance programs, there is a limit of 10 absent days per fiscal year for which the child care providers may be reimbursed. So this would allow the families, the children and families who meet specified criteria to exceed the 10 absent days upon request of the program and approval of the county. It specifies that if a child attends a child care program for part of an authorized day, the payment to the provider must be for the full amount of care authorized for that day, and it becomes effective January 1st of 2013. There is a slight fiscal note, as you can tell, Mr. Chair, and I'm really not quite sure why, but perhaps somebody can address that. And then with me, I have
page two.
Hi.
I have Ms. Carolyn Unke from Southern Plains Education Cooperative from my home, and I have Ms. Kruger. Leah Dahl. Okay, excuse me. Principal of the Intermediate District of 287. And I will let either one of those two start.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caroline Unke, and I come from a small town southwest of the metro area named Fairmont, Minnesota. I have worked in an alternate – can you guys hear me?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've worked in an alternative school in Fairmont for 13 years, and we have about 50 to 60 students a year, and I work very closely with our teen moms. And I've never been here before, so I'm a little nervous, so please be patient with me. But I had to come. I had to come here today because I do work with our teen moms, and I just want to share what I do down in Fairmont. One of the things I told you I do is I work with my teen moms very closely, and one thing that I do know is they want to be in school, and they want to get their high school diploma. Sometimes real life situations keep them from coming to school. One of the things that is a problem is their family is not always supportive, so they're on their own, and I'm who they have. Sometimes most of them are low income. Sometimes they can't get to school because their car broke down and they don't have money to fix their car. Luckily, I know people who can fix their car. And sometimes they can't get to school because there's no gas money. And, of course, I help with the gas money. We don't have transportation in Fairmont like you have up here. We have no busing. They can't get on the school bus because babies can't go on the school bus. When they can't get to school, we have a taxi, and the taxi is a lot of money, and they can't afford it. I have given taxi tokens. I've tried to get all the other people in our community to help, but sometimes they just can't get there. Sometimes your babies get sick, and daycares won't take them. Last year, I had a teen mom whose baby went to Rochester for 2 weeks. When she came back, that's 10 days. When she came back, the daycare wouldn't take her baby for 3 more days, so she missed 13 days in 1 month. She will be graduating in June because we worked with her with the school, and she had those extra days to work with. Sometimes the moms get sick. Sometimes they need to go to appointments. We try to get them after school. Last year, we had 3 teen parents graduate. Last week, we had 2 teen moms graduate early, and in June, we'll have 2 more graduate early, or graduate in June. And every one of them have missed more than 10 days. We at the school work really hard to keep them in school, and they call me and they talk to me about why they can't be there. And I try to work really hard with them to get them there in some way or another. And so I do think if we say 10 days is the limit and no more daycare, I do believe they will drop out. A lot of our teen moms stay in Fairmont. We do have a college, and some of them are going to that college. I just foresee if I have to tell them after 10 days there's no daycare, I won't see them anymore. And I really wish you would, you know, support this bill or whatever that is. Sorry. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your work, and thank you for taking the time to come up this morning to talk about the bill and about the things you do. I'm sure that the town of Fairmont appreciates it, and we certainly do as well. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And then the next testifier is Leah Dahl.
Lee Dahl.
Lee, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here today, and I have to just say, you know, seeing all your names that I see on the in the newspaper, everything, it's really cool to be here because, as a public educator, you don't always get to get to settings like this. So, as I said, my name is Lee Dahl. I'm an Area Learning Center principal with 287. 287 is a collaborative school district in western Hennepin County. It's actually made up of 12 school districts. And we largely do special education and alternative education kinds of services. Some of our members include Osseo, Robbinsdale, Edina, Eden Prairie, St. Louis Park, Minnetonka, to name a few. And I'm here today to ask you to support Senate File 2157, and I'll make my 3 points briefly. And I did want to say we have two teen parent programs, one in Robbinsdale and one in Richfield. And Minneapolis is not a member of 287, so they have a whole another contingency of kids also, and we're talking for them too today. Having specific teen parent programs results in positive social income and works to break the cycle of poverty by graduating our students. And as Carolyn said, our students do want to graduate. The 25-day absence is shared by two very at-risk children, really, if you think of it, instead of the 10-day. If the mom's gone, so is the baby. If the baby's gone, so is the mom. I just had a quick example the other day of pink eye, where a baby couldn't be in the daycare for 5 days. Well, that would eat up half of the 10-day allowance and would, like you say, if they missed 10 days, they would not be able to continue to attend school. I also wanted to point out that this is not a request for an increase, but rather to maintain what we have and have had for several years and has worked. My second point is at-risk students miss school for the very reasons that make them at risk, and a policy that further discourages them to come to school once they've missed 10 days doesn't feel like good policy. Additionally, it's unfair to shift the burden of the expense to the schools because, of course, the schools don't have extra money, and yet we have fixed expenses hiring the daycare workers and the facilities. Additionally, the absence days are cumulative, so if you hit your 10-day mark by April or May, which we know is possible and likely, then you're done for the whole calendar year. And again, we don't want to tell kids, you know, you can come, but the baby can't, because we'll lose them. My final point is that funding daycare in order to assure school attendance results in long-term independence from the county, and we want to try to break that cycle of poverty. It's a high price to pay for students if they end up supported by the county services and their children following suit. We believe education's empowerment, and we're working hard to make that happen. I thank you for listening to me today.
Thank you, Ms. Dahl. Are there questions for the witnesses? Appreciate your being here this morning. We do have a couple other people on the list that would like to testify, and if they would come forward. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Ruth Kruger. I'm the Director of Employment and Economic Assistance in Dakota County that administers the child care program, and I chair the Early Childhood Committee for MACSA, which is the County Social Service Administrators. You've heard very eloquently from the social services side of it and from the educator side. So I'm here to talk for the county administrators that administer this program that you have set up. Our number one priority when we add people to from basic sliding fee are teen moms. And I can tell you that last year Dakota County was overspent all year, and we took the risk and continued to add teen moms throughout the year because you don't get a do-over with that population. If they drop out of high school because they don't have child care, it's very difficult to get them back. So we are in favor of this amendment. We do not want these young women to drop out for any reason and continue to stay on our public assistance rolls. And that's what the research shows, that if you don't get your high school diploma, you're at risk for the rest of your working career.
Thank you, Ms. Kruger.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marcy Jeffries, and I'm standing in for Alex Fitzsimmons. I'll just talk briefly a little bit more to the research. I'm with the Children's Defense Fund. As you know, investing in children, all our children, is good for our future, but the research shows that investing in these really high-risk children is likely to bring the biggest return on investment from whatever we provide for these children, and we will, again, all benefit from that. As we've heard from prior speakers, the educational piece is really important. Other research shows that the best predictor of a child's educational achievement, academic achievement, is their mother's educational achievement. So these kids will have a much better chance of themselves doing well in school if their mothers are able to continue their education. The other piece is the toxic stress. These families, teen moms, low-income teen moms, are already under a high degree of stress. And, again, as others have testified, we're concerned that the 10-day will further increase their stress levels. And this is stress that can actually be measured in terms of cortisol levels. It's harmful to the child's brain development, and it's harmful to their mother's brain development. For some young mothers, it's still developing. Increasing the absent day limit will make it easier for these moms to nurture their infants and toddlers and provide the environment they need. So we think, again, this bill is an important another step in taking what we're learning through research through a variety of disciplines and translating it into state policies. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jeffries. Any questions? Sir Rosen, do we have one other person on the list? Is that?
Oh. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Nino. I'm the Executive Director of Child Care Works. Child Care Works is a statewide child care advocacy organization whose mission is to achieve and sustain high-quality, affordable child care options for families and children. I'm pleased to testify today in support of Senate File 2157. Child Care Works recognizes that the children of teen parents and teen parents themselves are among some of our most vulnerable populations and deserve additional support and services in order to be successful in life. Child Care Works testified before this committee last session in opposition to the reduction of absent days from 25 to 10. Recognizing at that time the unintended consequences such a policy would have, which you are now hearing about today. As you consider the bill, I hope you will also reflect upon the wider impacts an absent day limit has on all vulnerable families who will be put in the position of having to choose between losing or quitting their jobs to care for sick children or having to bring unwell children into child care settings, creating additional health risks for all children. During last year's shutdown, Child Care Works received hundreds of stories that demonstrated how fragile the child care system really is. Some families and providers were literally days away from losing jobs, home foreclosure, and closing of child care programs when we heard that child care assistance would be restored. While the absent day limit created a small state savings, it certainly will have negative impacts on the retention of jobs for three separate populations. First, the child care providers who will not be reimbursed for ill children and may need to stop providing care for these children. Second, the parents who will have to choose between working or caring for their ill children. And three, the children who represent our future workforce who will be subjected to disjointed care, which we know can be toxic to healthy brain development in young children. And for private businesses, which most childcare settings are, there isn't the luxury of only paying their teachers 9/10 of their salary if 9 out of 10 children are out sick that day. There is no reduction in the rent when children are absent. So while these are fixed costs, what the absent day limit does is create a variable revenue source, making it nearly impossible to employ a sustainable business model. Finally, Mr. Chair and members, based upon a survey of private pay parents in centers around the state, children and infants had on average 23 to 24 absent days per year. It seems reasonable that families receiving child care assistance would be allowed the same number of paid absent days as our private pay parents. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions? I'm wondering if, Mr. Albrecht, could you make a couple of comments about the fiscal note? Senator Rosen had asked a little bit about that earlier, just maybe explanatory
Well, Mr. Chair, the fiscal note, as you can see, is minimal for fiscal year 2013. There would be a delayed implementation date, but there's already a delayed implementation date of the change that we did last year, so that there's only a $3,000 cost in fiscal year 2013 and then a $16,000 ongoing cost. A very small proportion of the overall payments in the child care programs are affected by this change, and you can see the detail of that on page 2 in the lower part, where it shows that only a few of the absent days a year would be added by this change.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Senator Rosen, any additional comments?
And thank you, Mr. Albrecht, for that, Mr. Chair. And as it was stated, that this was a change that we made in 2011, and I think there was probably some very harsh, unintended consequences with this. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Sharon and Senator Lori for being co-authors on this bill. I think it's really important to this is a simple prevention measure, and as it was stated, this is all about making sure that we provide the educational opportunities for these young mothers, because that is the best help that we can do for these children going forward. And because they have homelessness, domestic violence, transportation poverty, there's lack of support, there's all these issues that we would like to fix, but this is the best way we can help them, is to keep them in school and take care of their children for them, right, for daycare. So with that, Mr. Chair,
thank you.
If there's no further questions, I'd like to move that Senate File 2157 be recommended passed and moved into your omnibus bill.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we lay this over? We're going to take up a bill tomorrow, and this is one of the things that we contemplate putting into it. So moving it forward, why don't we just lay it over and incorporate it into the larger bill?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And members, that concludes the bills we have on the agenda. Tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. in room 15. 6 p.m. room 15 is where we'll be meeting to finish off the work on the finance bill that we're in process of assembling. So, till then, we are adjourned.